You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the west coast of America and 9 a.m. here in the east. Welcome to Hagman, the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour for today. It's Tuesday, August 22nd, 2017, one day post-eclipse. Thanks for joining me this morning for an in-depth look at tomorrow's headlines as I delve deep into a number of important issues. Of course, I'm going to be talking about today. Today is going to be dedicated to the most important story, I believe, that exists today. Andrew McCarthy did a column yesterday on this in the National Review. Now, ordinarily, you got to be careful with publications, but McCarthy is a former federal prosecutor, and I've got to tell you, he knows what he's talking about. He has weighed in on the indictment against the Awan cabal. Now, something that I have to admit, I did not pick up on. He did, of course. That's his business. That's his job. And when I reread the indictment against Imran Awan, I saw what he was talking about. And this is extremely important. But first, before I get into laying all of this out about the Awan criminal cabal of espionage, of blackmail, and perhaps even murder. It's one of the biggest stories. It's much bigger than Watergate. It's much more important, I believe, than Watergate. It's perhaps the most important story that most Americans have yet to hear about, or they just don't know the scope of it if they've heard about it. And certainly the indictment of Imran Awan, which I've got right here. That's right, a copy right here. I couldn't do this if I didn't have it, right? I got a copy, which is as McCarthy pointed out, was somewhat hard to find. But before I get to that, I do want to mention the continued deep state attacks against Donald Trump. And, of course, right now, this flying kind of under the radar, but you're going to see more of this come out, especially on MSNBC or MSDNC, whichever you want to call it. The Black Caucus plans to discuss impeachment. Now, this just came out here within the last, 12 to 24 hours. The Congressional Black Caucus, it's a group of black lawmakers. They've got a big say in the fate of Donald Trump and his legislation. Now, yesterday, they sent him a very clear message. We don't think you understand us at all. All right. This is an article written by William Douglas, of course, in McClatchy. The caucus chairman urged cancellation. The caucus chairman urged cancellation of next month's highly anticipated meeting between the White House officials and leaders of the nation's historical black colleges. Now, he plans to have 49-member caucus meet when the Congress returns in a couple of weeks to discuss whether the black caucus, whether to back Democrat-led efforts to impeach Donald Trump. See, this is what this is all about. You know, when you talk about race, this is all about race, all about the exploitation of race. But this, in the end, the big deal about this is, of course, taking down Trump, Donald Trump as president, taking down the presidency, and ultimately taking down our republic. People cannot understate the importance of what's going on. So, it's important to note, Republicans right now, they control 52 of the Senate's 100 seats and 240 of the House's 435 seats. So, think about this. Just keep that number in the back of your mind. Whenever you hear things discussed about the composition, you've got 52 Republicans in the United States Senate out of 100, and you have 240 out of 435 seats. Now, obviously, the Republicans, the GOP, they're not talking about impeachment yet, but I do believe that the GOP establishment will be talking about that at some point. Why? Because Donald Trump is going to be upsetting the apple cart, but the deep state is so entrenched within the government. When I say deep state, I'm talking about the Obama holdovers. I'm talking about the infiltration of the Communist Party into our government. And people might think that that's an overstatement, but look at Bernie Sanders. Look at what he stands for, the platform. He's a registered socialist. Socialist. Think about that for a minute. Anyway, they're going after Donald Trump. Take down the presidency. Take down the president himself by any means necessary, by any means possible. And I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that that's their endgame objective. And, of course, that's to cause chaos throughout the United States and to really cause a constitutional crisis. And I think they will, in some way, shape, or form, if they are not stopped, will, in fact, do that. Now, I want to put that on your radar because I think it's extremely important. And when you look at the composition of the blacks in our Congress, which is, and I'm not speaking race. I mean, that's their name, the Black Caucus. That's their name. I didn't name them, so don't blame me. When you start looking at the composition of the Senate and the House of Representatives, whether one is black or white, to me that doesn't matter. But they have formed this Congressional Black Caucus. And the formation of this caucus, it's got an interesting history. I'm not going to bore you with the history, but it does have an interesting history. It goes back to 1971, which was, 46 years ago. There were 13 founding members. And they got together. They created this political organization made up of African-American members of the United States Congress, and to look, ostensibly, to look out for and look after the very specific cultural and racial concerns, despite their talk of diversity, I might add. But having said that, that's what this is. Now they're getting together and saying, look, Donald Trump, hey, we got to talk about impeachment. We need to do this. You're not representing our values any longer. This is one more arrow in the quiver, I suppose, of the deep state. Keep your eye on that. Keep your eye on the composition, not just the racial composition, but the ideological composition, even within the GOPE, and especially perhaps within the GOPE, but within all of Congress, all of the Senate. Keep your eyes peeled on that. Now, the story, or the article, the report, today's broadcast, what I've been working on for the last number of months is, of course, the infiltration, the Pakistani infiltration and compromise of Congress, speaking of Congress. Now, You may recall it was on February 2nd of this year when Imran Awan and his brother were no longer permitted access to the computer network at the U.S. House of Representatives. It was February 2nd of 2017. As they were under investigation because of what was called a procurement scam. In other words, taking equipment from the U.S. Congress. And there was a reference to 20 burglaries. Do you remember that? Okay, this is how it all started, at least in the public's eye. At the epicenter of this was Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is not only the congressperson, Democratic congressperson from Florida, since 2005, I believe, representing two different districts in Florida, but also was the Democratic National Committee chairperson up until she wasn't anymore, and that was the day before the convention. And in a very highly unusual move where she was let go, basically, or walked away, shall we say. It'll be nice to her at this point because she's going to have a lot of answering to do. Now, what has come about since all of this, since February 2nd of 2017, was one of her IT people named Imran Awan was indicted. In fact, he was indicted. Him, along with his wife, Hina Alvi, were indicted for... Let me grab this, and I apologize for the paper rustling here. They were indicted for conspiracy, bank fraud, false statements on a loan and credit application, unlawful monetary transactions, and aiding and abetting causing an act to be done. In other words, that's an inchoate crime, as is conspiracy to the actual crime of bank fraud and wire fraud. And this is the U.S. District or United States of America versus Imran Awan and Hina Alvi defendants. Now, Imran is Wasserman Schultz's main IT guy. Hina Alvi is his wife. The indictment is from the criminal term of a grand jury that was sworn in on November 13th, 2016. Now, grand juries exist across the United States, and they hear numerous cases. So don't make too much about when the grand jury was sworn in, the date there. But this is a grand jury indictment by the grand jury for the United States District Court for the District of Columbia. All right, and it's got the different counts, of course. Count one, conspiracy, through the final count, as I mentioned. Now, that's nice, right? Well, here's the bigger issue, and you've heard me talk about this before. This is not just Imran Awan and Hina Alvi, his wife. This is Imran Awan, his brother Abid Awan, Jamal Moise Awan, Muhammad Awan, Nalia Awan, and Omar Awan, plus Hina Alvi, plus Abid's wife. They were all working for Congress as IT professionals. They all had access to the various computer equipment. And this is not just about one case of getting a loan at one time and lying on the loan application. This is much bigger than that. This is not about just Debbie Wasserman Schultz or the shared employee status. Imran, Abid, Jamal, Hina Alvi, Natalia Sova, Rau Abbas, in addition to the others I mentioned, all worked for congresspeople from 2004 until 2017, collectively making between $4 and $6 million. Plus, in addition to that, they had a number of other businesses, car dealerships, technology companies on their own, and even some, I do suspect, illegitimate or non-registered businesses as well. In total, 80, count them, 80 congressmen and women were affected by the Awans and that network of what I will call Pakistani spies. These are all Pakistani nationals. First introduced by Gregory Meeks of New York. Now, there are some people that say, well, he wasn't the first one to introduce the Awans. Well, okay, I'm going to put him as the first. And then, of course, Debbie Wasserman Schultz after that. And now, of course, having affected a total of 80 congressmen and women over a 13-year period. Working for congressmen and women who were part and parcel to the three highest level intelligence committees, the House Intelligence Committee, the Homeland Security Committee, and the Foreign Affairs Committee. Having access to all of these committees, in addition to all of that, having access or having created an off-site server This is Imran and his people creating an offsite server. Does that sound familiar? Much like Hillary Rodham Clinton, but an offsite server to store information from the congressman. That's a no-no. But none of this, I suspect, are you going to be hearing with respect to the mainstream media. You're only going to be hearing about this very narrow investigation, this very narrow indictment. And this is what Andrew McCarthy had referenced, and even McCarthy's writing is very narrow in scope. What I want you to do, what I'm going to do right now, is I'm going to play an audio clip from Fox News, Sarah Carter from Circa News, talking in an interview on Fox News. Take a listen to this overview of the investigation regarding Imran Awan, Debbie Wasserman Schultz's key IT person. The reason I want you to listen to just the facts that are being brought out in this particular interview, and then we're going to compare them to what is really taking place. But Sarah Carter does a good job in laying out the facts in this very narrow accusation or area of accusation. And then consider Debbie Wasserman Schultz's role as the head of the DNC and her role as a congresswoman as well. So I'm going to play this. Listen to Sarah Carter, Circa News, in an interview earlier this year with Fox News, and then I'm going to come back and explain what you heard, and then I'm going to play another clip from Debbie Wasserman Schultz's testimony regarding the use of offsite or use of different applications that are not necessarily approved by the House, which is really kind of unusual, and then I'm going to get into the indictment. So here, the first clip is this is from Fox News, Sarah Carter, Circa News, and being interviewed by Fox News about this situation. Here it is.
The biggest scandal you may not have seen. A former IT aide to Debbie Wasserman Schultz is now reportedly under investigation for selling U.S. secrets to Russia and Pakistan. Sarah Carter is an investigative reporter for Circa News, and she joins us right now with more on this. And Sarah, you know, everybody had assumed somehow the Russians were behind this leak of DNC emails. Might this gentleman in any way be connected to any of this?
I believe so. I mean, I think there's an ongoing investigation, but just look at the facts here, Trish. I mean, they had access to the DNC servers. They had been working there, Imran specifically, for a decade. They had taken $4 million prior to being hired. They weren't even vetted properly. They could easily be spies for Pakistan's ISI, which is like RCIA, or they could have been selling information to the Russians, and not only the Russians, but think about it, Pakistan's very close relationship with the Chinese. Mm-hmm. So I think that the Inspector General, when they saw all of this smoke around this investigation last year and turned it over for a criminal probe, I think right now the FBI and everybody else is saying, whoa, wait a minute. These people had access to some of the most classified information that our House Intelligence mm-hmm. Committee, Senate Intelligence Committee, and Foreign Affairs Committee had inside those servers. So we have to ask those very specific questions.
I think they're important questions to ask. I mean, but we're making a leap here. I mean, I think it's fair to say that if this person did this, he doesn't have the best moral character in that he's allegedly stealing and overbilling to the tune of $4 million. So if he's willing to do anything for a buck, who's to say he wouldn't be paid by some foreign government to actually release these emails or to steal secrets? I mean, that's where it takes you, right? You wonder, was there perhaps a spy in the midst of Debbie Wasserman Schultz's operation?
Yeah, you have to wonder that. You have to wonder why she defended him so vehemently, even to the point where she fought the Capitol Hill police on not accessing a laptop that belonged to her, which has now been turned over to investigators. You know, they tried to turn the story around and say, well, people are only going after Imran Awan because he's a Muslim. And that is not the case whatsoever. You know, I've spent a large majority of my career, Trish, in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And I can tell you this, the Pakistanis have one of the most sophisticated spy networks in the world. And our CIA knows that, and others know that as well. And they have very close connections with what we consider some of our biggest foes, Russia and China. So we'd have to ask those questions.
Sarah, let's think about what needs to happen next. I mean, there are a lot of questions here, right? Nobody's really asking these questions, by the way. Amazingly, you see so many leaks on the Trump administration and lots of questions about Russia, et cetera. And I'm not saying that some of it may not be justified. I mean, if the Russians interfered in our election, that's a big problem. But maybe they were somehow interfering through this guy, too. I mean, shouldn't that be on the table? What's the next step to try and get to the bottom of it?
Well, absolutely. What they're going to be looking at, Trish, and I think you're absolutely right. We want to know the truth wherever that truth leads. But what they're going to be looking at is what information was sent to overseas servers. So what we know for sure right now, according to law enforcement, even to some of the people that I've been speaking to, sources on Capitol Hill and senior law enforcement officials, is that some of the information that was in those servers was sent overseas. And this is very, very dangerous, because if there was classified information in there, or even personal emails between people in the Senate and others that they believe that could be used for blackmail, I guarantee you that the FBI is not only going to be questioning Imran Awan, they're going to be questioning Debbie Wasserman Schultz, they're going to be questioning other people in the Senate, they're going to try to figure out what was sent overseas and for what purposes. This will probably be, Trish, one of the biggest stories of the year when all is said and done.
All right, certainly lots of questions. Sarah Carter, thank you very much.
Thank you.
An understatement, indeed, I think, with respect to it being the biggest story of the year. Maybe not. I guess it will be the biggest story, if it all comes out. Now, the indictment, as I had mentioned to you, the indictment that of Imran Awan and his wife, Hina Alvi, that is. It was limited in scope, very limited. And I refer to what Andrew McCarthy from National Review had said. He said this. Here's a very, very strange thing about the Justice Department's indictment of Imran Awan and Hina Alvi. And, of course, he goes into describing what the indictment was about, or just give a brief overview of Imran Awan. There's not a word in it about anyone's attempted fleeing to Pakistan. None. Zero. No reference to it. The indictment undertakes, he writes, undertakes to describe in detail four counts of bank fraud conspiracy, very limited, false statements on credit applications and unlawful monetary transactions, yet leaves out the most damning evidence of guilt. In fact, the indictment appears to go out of its way not to mention it. But he recaps. He says this, as I explained about 3 weeks ago, there are very intriguing this is a very intriguing investigation of the Awan family. There are about six of them. Well, I told you, there's many more than that, in addition to close friends, brothers, spouses, and attached others. They were retained by various Democrats as computer systems managed, IT managers, at compensation levels dwarfing that of the average congressional staffer. That's why they made upwards of between $4 and $6 million, depending on who you include in that. Collectively over the course of 12, 13 years. They're, for example, and I had said this in previous broadcasts, but it's important, I think, to really understand how big this is. For example, Imran Awan was paid $165,130 per year. Abid, $164,980. By the way, Abid filed bankruptcy in 2012 to the tune of $1.1 million in debt. Jamal Moise Awan received $157,577 as he was hired at the age of 20. Omar Awan in that same category. These people, when they went back to Pakistan, were treated as dignitaries by Pakistani officials, by the way. The Awan brothers had complete and direct access to information of three extremely sensitive committees, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the Homeland Security Committee, and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. The access to information they had, along with their known or suspected affiliations to groups such as Hezbollah, the Muslim Brotherhood, and so on, anyone with any inside knowledge about this case are shaken to the core. And I mentioned at the beginning about whether Meeks was the first. Actually, Imran was first hired by Robert Wexler of Florida as the IT director. And then that was in 04. And then 05, Debbie Wasserman Schultz hired him. And then at the same time, concurrent with Gregory Meeks as a shared employee. But consider that Imran and his brother, Imran owned or owns 12, roughly 12 houses, different houses around the D.C. area. Upwards of 20 businesses, some of them just shell businesses. He rented out some of the homes, by the way. He ran a car dealership, I'd mentioned this before, known as Cars International A, which is the acronym of CIA. Isn't that interesting? He ran an export company to Pakistan. He had a computer system sales company, which many believe, and I do suspect this to be the case, although I can't prove it, would take the hardware from the congressional offices and then put back doors in it and in the hardware and then take the either sell or take the hardware back. Isn't that rather interesting? And that's where the procurement scam comes in, that reference to that. Although leaving out the alleged back doors in the software and hardware. And he had a BlackBerry cell phone repair operation. And now George Webb, regardless of what you think of him as an investigator, or it doesn't matter, the fact of the matter is upwards of four or five laptops, upwards of three dozen, or I'm sorry, not three dozen, anywhere between 18 and 20 BlackBerry telephones. Four to five laptops, as I said, a router were found at the previous home of Imran Awan, who Imran rented this house to a Marine by the name of Andrew Taggart. George Webb had interviewed Andrew Taggart, and Taggart had said, yeah, you know, in the garage, there were these BlackBerries, the laptops, and a significant number with U.S. government markings on them. So Taggart, being in the military, his wife, Taggart's wife, was in the Navy, contacted NCIS. NCIS came out. They took the they took possession of the equipment, and it's now in the hands of the federal government. But yet, this is all about just a fraudulent bank loan, right? And even further, that indictment about the bank loan it doesn't even mention Imran Awan, his being arrested at the airport, Dulles Airport. Now, Hina Alvi, I'm just going to cite, from Andrew McCarthy's works. Going back to Andrew McCarthy, what he said. The Awans fell under suspicion in late 2016. They were fired at the beginning of February. That was February 2nd, if you recall, on suspicion of mishandling sensitive information to which they had access to, the scanning members' email, transferring files to remote servers under the Awans' control, and stealing computer equipment and hard drives, some of which they had attempted to destroy when they were found out, along with a sideline in this procurement fraud. Now, McCarthy goes on to say that, you know, almost all of the Awans were fired, let go, on February 2nd. Hina Alvi and her husband Imran stayed on, even though they were no longer authorized to have access to house computer systems. In other words, they weren't allowed to do the work they were hired to do, yet Debbie Wasserman Schultz continued to keep them on the payroll as in an advisory capacity. Alvi continued to be retained by Congressman Gregory Meeks while Imran was retained by Schultz, Wasserman Schultz. During that time, we know Hina Alvi, while working for Gregory Meeks, was packing up her house and taking her three young daughters out of school just before taking off and fleeing to Pakistan. And again, Imran was kept on the payroll six more months by Wasserman Schultz. And McCarthy notes that, you know, DNC chair, former, and of course, Clinton insider. Now, she finally fired him only after he was arrested at the airport right before a scheduled flight to Qatar. From there, he planned to join his wife in Pakistan. It's interesting how that works. There are grounds to suspect, writes McCarthy, blackmail given A, the staggering sums of money paid to the Iwans over the years, B, the sensitive congressional committees or communications to which they had access, and committees as well, and C, the alleged involvement Imran Iwan and other brothers had in a blackmail slash extortion scheme against their stepmother, which is a story in and of itself, I got to tell you. And D, Wasserman Schultz's months of protecting Iwan and potentially impeding the investigation of Washington investigation. You remember when the one of the laptops was found in a cubbyhole by the Capitol Police, and Wasserman Schultz went head to head with Chief Vera Dorsa about the chief of the Capitol Police about the laptop and wanting it back. She wanted it back like you couldn't believe, and ultimately threatened him. And I'm going to play that clip right now. It's two minutes, 30 seconds. This is a part of a much larger clip that gets into diversity of the police force. And I mean, it's just a ridiculous, an absolutely ridiculous hearing. But this is the pertinent part, and I'm going to play that right now. Let's go ahead and play the Debbie Wasserman Schultz threatening clip. It's about 2 minutes. Just listen to this and listen to what she is getting at, and then at the end, what she says. You may have already heard this, but it's always good to listen to it again.
And then lastly, I'd like to know how Capitol Police handle equipment that belongs to a member or a staffer that's been lost within the Capitol complex and found or recovered by one of your officers. What happens?
Sure. Well, it's processed on what's called a PD-81, which is a property record. And depending on the property, depending on how it's, if you can legitimately determine ownership, then it's generally turned back over to the owner of the property. If it's part of an ongoing case, then there are other things that have to occur for that to happen.
So if a member says that they have equipment that's been lost and you find it, it would be returned to the member?
In the general sense, yes.
Okay.
You have to be able to positively identify the property and be able to establish ownership.
Right. And if ownership is established?
If it's part of an ongoing case, then there are additional things that need to be done.
But if the member owns the equipment and there is no ongoing case related to that member, then the equipment is supposed to be returned.
Right. In a general sense, yes.
No, I mean in a specific sense. If the member loses the equipment, says they lose the equipment,
yes, ma'am,
and it is found by the Capitol Police, it is supposed to be returned.
If ownership has been established,
right,
it'll be returned. If it's subject to an ongoing investigation, there are additional things,
okay,
that need to be turned.
But
over.
Not an ongoing investigation related to the member. If the equipment belongs to the member, it has been lost, they say it's been lost, and it's been identified as that member's, then the Capitol Police is supposed to return it. Correct?
Well, it's not I can't give a yes or no answer on that because I know
it's a simple yes or no answer.
Well,
if a member loses the equipment,
yes, ma'am,
and it is found by the Capitol Police or your staff, and it is identified as that member's equipment, and the member is not associated with any case, and that is their equipment, it is supposed to be returned. Yes or no?
Depends on the circumstances, and if the circumstances.
I don't understand how that's possible. Members. Equipment is members' equipment. It is not, under my understanding, the Capitol Police is not able to confiscate members' equipment when the member is not under investigation. It is their equipment, and it's supposed to be returned.
Well, I think there's extenuating circumstances in this case, and I think that, you know, working through my counsel and the necessary personnel, if that in fact is the case, and with the permission of through the investigation, and we'll return the equipment. But until that's accomplished, I can't return the equipment.
I think you're violating the rules when you conduct your business that way, and should expect that there would be consequences. I yield back.
So how many people remember that? There it is. Okay. Just as a reminder at the hubris of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. But back to the indictment. Why did the FBI and the Capitol Police allow Hina Alvi to leave the country? She left the country on March 5th. Remember, right before that clip, I was talking about Hina Alvi just taken off to Pakistan. She left the country on March 5th when there were grounds to arrest her at Dulles Airport. What were the grounds? Well, she was carrying $12,400 in cash on her body, and she did not fill out the required paperwork. They could have stopped her right then and there. Why did they wait to charge her until just about a week ago or so, till last week, by which time she was already in Pakistan, from which it's likely that it's going to be impossible to extradite her for prosecution? What about the Awan brothers and other apparent accomplices? What has become of them since they were fired by the House almost 7 months ago? None of this is addressed at all in this indictment. The accomplices. The indictment raises even more questions. Imran Awan's sudden arrest in late July meant the Justice Department would have to file formal charges in court. Thus, there was the hope that we get some answers. Instead, the indictment raises more questions than anything. To start with, it's not the easiest thing to get one's hands on the indictment. And it's interesting because as an investigator, you know, you can find these indictments pretty readily, as obviously you can Mr. McCarthy. The case is being handled by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia, and there's no press release about the indictment on the office's website. Though U.S. Attorney's Offices, they routinely issue press releases and make charging documents available in cases of far less national importance than this. You can get the indictment, and I'll post it on HomelandSecurityUS.com. But it happened. In fact, McCarthy found it via the Orlando Sentinel, and I can't remember how I found it. But anyway, the U.S. Attorney's Office is currently led by Channing Phillips, and that's who signed the indictment, Channing Phillips. He's an Obama holdover who is never confirmed. Still waiting Senate confirmation is Jesse Liu, nominated by President Trump in June. Now, meanwhile, Stephen Wasserman, and we've heard this all over the airwaves, Stephen Wasserman, which is the brother of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, he's been an assistant U.S. attorney in the office that's prosecuting this case for a number of years. Now, there's no indication that Wasserman has any formal role in the case. However, come on. I'm sure you can just imagine. And as McCarthy says, the indictment, all four charges in the indictment flow from a financial fraud conspiracy of a very short duration. And this is interesting. Only Imran and his wife are named as defendants. There's no reference to the Awan family structure in connection with the House communication system. Now, even worse, there's not a word about Hina Alvi's flight to Pakistan, nor Imran Awan's failed attempt to follow her there. This is not an oversight. This is an omission that is intentional. This is an intentional omission. Now, it's common Justice Department practice within the Justice Department in pleading conspiracy indictment to allege that the scheme began on or about and then give its starting date and continued up to and including the date of the filing of the indictment. But that's not what this how this indictment reads. Strictly speaking, by the way, writes Andrew McCarthy, a conspiracy ends when the crime, that is, its objective, has been completed. Well, but there's no requirement that a specific end date be set or set forth in the indictment at all. Therefore, prosecutors go as long as they can, for example, right up to the date the grand jury voted to indict, to give themselves the widest possible berth to agree and argue the evidence damaging to the defense is both relevant and admissible. Now, that's not what happened in this indictment. The Justice Department alleges that the conspiracy took place from on or about December 12, 2016 through on or about February 27, 2017. Now, February 27th was 6 days before Alvi fled and 5 months before Awan was arrested trying to leave the country. It makes absolutely no sense. This according to Andrew McCarthy. And having read My Share of Indictments, I agree. Indeed, it does not even make sense to, in the context of the narrow scheme prosecutors have charged. If you look at this indictment, this should be a sweeping indictment and be much more inclusive of others. This is very narrow in scope. And although the indictment says the conspiracy ended on February 27th, it alleges a relevant 83,000 interbank transfer that occurred the next day. In other words, prosecutors assert that a money transfer supposedly in furtherance of the conspiracy happened the day after the conspiracy was already over. Did you get that? That's this indictment. Now, it's very possible that it could be a mistake on the date. People make mistakes on dates all the time. And we all do. But what's not a mistake is there's no explanation for omitting a fraudulent cash transfer prosecution. The fact that the conspirators undertook to transfer themselves to the foreign country where they sent the money. In other words, none of this is in the indictment. It's not included in the indictment. None of it. Why did the FBI permit Hina Alvi to leave the country? Before she boarded her March 5th flight to Qatar en route to Pakistan, agents briefly detained her at U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Agents had already searched her baggage. They found $12,400 in cash. It's a felony right there, unless you fill out the proper required forms. If you want the sections, you can go to McCarthy's article or see sections 5316 and 5322 of Title 31 of the U.S. Code, but there's no indication that she did so at all. She should have been arrested. What'd they do, help her? Fill out the forms? Turn a blind eye? But what's the deal with that? They could have done something, but by the time that she left, the Awans had been under investigation by various federal agencies for at least 3 months. The FBI was sufficiently informed of what was going on with the Awans. And, you know, even the people paying attention to programs like ours, and again, I'll mention George Webb because he was out in front of this, the Daily Caller, Luke Rosiak, all of these alternative media sources way out ahead of the mainstream media. But in the end, why even let her go, given the fact that even in the indictment that the FBI does not believe, or I'm sorry, in the affidavit, that the FBI does not believe that Alvi has any intention to return to the United States. And even more just twisted and more questions remain, why not include Alvi's flight as well as Awan's later attempt to go on the run in describing the money transfer scheme charged in the indictment? These episodes are damning proof of fraudulent intent, which prosecutors must establish at a trial if they are to convict Awan. Did prosecutors fail to mention the flight evidence in the hope of diverting attention from the government's decision to let Alvi flee? Again, one would hope not. But if not, what other explanation is there? So, in the end, to sum this up, the indictment itself, per Andrew McCarthy, is an exercise in omission. No mention of the Awan group, their group theft of information from Congress. Not a hint about the astronomical sums of family. The family was paid much of it for no-show work. In other words, these people were on the payroll but did not work. Nothing about Awan being on the payroll for 6 months. After being kept out of the House, the U.S. House. Not a word about Wasserman Schultz's keeping him on the payroll, that is, during which time he was known to be under investigation. His wife was known to have fled to Pakistan. He was not credentialed to do IT work. Nothing about Wasserman Schultz's efforts to prevent investigators from examining Awan's laptop. You heard that clip where she threatened Verdosa, the chief of the Capitol Police. You know, a likely, writes Andrew McCarthy, a likely currency transportation offense against Alvi goes uncharged. And as for the offenses that are charged, prosecutors plead them in a manner that avoids any reference to what should be their best evidence. And I would argue not only that, what would be the bigger evidence or the bigger picture here, and that's the espionage that has taken place in the within Congress. This is absolutely incredible. Now, what does Debbie Wasserman Schultz have to say for herself about, well, what's her defense? What's her defense going to be? Listen to this short clip now by Debbie Wasserman Schultz about using various applications and actually blaming others for her shortfalls. Have a listen to this.
If a member is using an application outside of the House infrastructure and the protection of the our cybersecurity network, they're in violation of House policy.
Of the House policy 17, yes.
Are members monitored? Does the CAO's office examine whether members are following these rules? How is it enforced? And how do you make sure that if you're concerned, as you say you are, about protecting the information on the House IT network, how are you actually enforcing that and making members aware that the policy is that they either need to get approval to use an application outside of the network, or prior to that, that it needed to be on a device within the House network, not the House network?
We do inform every IT person, IT administrator in every congressional office of the change.
Okay.
And if that's not enough, we can make it.
I am more than happy to admit that I use Dropbox. I have used it for years and years and years. It is not blocked. I am fully able to use it. And I bet every other member that uses Dropbox is fully able to use it as well. So there is a vulnerability in our network, in spite of the fact that you say that you have taken steps to address it. And there is not a policy that applies across the board. And you need to make sure that you tighten up your rules and policies so that you can really assure us that you take seriously protecting our network.
Well, I will ensure that there's broader dissemination in the future.
So that's Debbie Wasserman Schultz's explanation. As rough it is as it was to perhaps hear or understand, what she's doing is she's blaming, hey, look, I use Dropbox. Isn't that okay? And if that wasn't okay, you should have told me it wasn't okay. Kind of diverting and deflecting from the real issue. But I think that shows some insight into her defense. Lastly, I'm going to mention this. There was an article that was published yesterday by Luke Rosiak. House Democrats' office approved a $120,000 write-off linked to Awan Brothers. And Luke Rosiak from the Daily Caller goes on to say that the chief of staff of the Democratic Representative Yvette Clark quietly agreed back in early of 2016 to sign away $120,000 of missing electronics problem on behalf of two former IT aides now suspected of stealing equipment from Congress. Clark's chief of staff at the time effectively dismissed the loss and prevented it from coming up in audits, in future audits, by removing the missing equipment from a house-wide tracking system after one of the Awan brothers altered the device or alerted the office the equipment was gone. In other words, they took it and reportedly took it and said, hey, you know what, it's missing. The Pakistani brothers are now at the center, of course, of the FBI investigation and the Capitol Police investigation, at the epicenter of which is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Well, now, look, the a senior House official with knowledge of the situation provided the Daily Caller with new details, and I'm getting information by different channels, that data has been stolen, the equipment has been stolen from Congress, verified that off-site servers were created by the Awan brothers and the Awan family. Information has been stolen. There's possible blackmail involved here. And by the way, that $120,000 write-off, that figure amounts to about a tenth of the office's annual budget, or enough to hire four legislative assistants to handle the concerns of the constituency in her New York district. Yet when one of the brothers alerted the office of the massive loss, the chief of staff signed a form that quietly just reconciled the missing equipment in the office budget. Just kind of said, okay, we'll just kind of hide this and forget about it. That's the cover. What do these people have? What do the Awans have, one might ask? Now, the Daily Caller goes. Luke does write further that the brothers are suspected to have orchestrated a long-running fraud scheme in which the office would purchase equipment in a way that avoided tracking by the central housewide administrators. They're suspected of working with an employee of CDW Government Inc. Now this is important. That's one of the Hill's largest technological providers, to alter invoices in order to avoid tracking. So you've got to factor in now this CD Government Inc., at least people within that organization, to cook the book, so to speak. The result, of course, would be that no one outside the office would notice if the equipment disappeared, and the investigators think that the goal of the scheme was to remove and sell the equipment outside of Congress. Actually, how about this? To remove the equipment and get it to in the hands of our foreign enemies. How's that? Those fraud schemes are just part of the criminal case being built against Imran Awan, his wife, he and Alvi, his brothers and such. But don't expect to see this, you know, out there anytime soon. I really don't believe you're going to see this. I mean, this is going to be the biggest story, but in terms of the actual damage done to our intelligence, because I do believe from the outset, and you go back to previous programs. When you go back and look at SEAL Team 6, and you look at Extortion 17, SEAL Team 6, you look at a number of different things. You look at the first raid in Yakla that Donald Trump, as commander-in-chief, had superintended, and the fact that it seemed like somebody was tipped off. You look at all of these cases, there's clearly not just a leak, but a huge flow of information, especially with the three government agencies, the three government committees. Now, in addition to that, there's also blackmail, I believe, because when you start chipping away at this, you have to ask yourself why Debbie Wasserman Schultz would keep on Imran Awan, why he would keep Imran Awan on for even after suspicion, even after he was indicted, for crying out loud. Or up till he was indicted, I should say. Why keep him on the payroll? There's something absolutely much bigger than anyone is getting at. And the damage done, folks, is absolutely incredible. I believe the damage done. And once this does get out. Now, I will say this. Right now, there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of people talking about this who don't have the... don't have access to the documentation, for example, don't have access to the indictment, or haven't looked at the indictment, or haven't seen the various, or haven't gone through the various levels of businesses, gone through the UCC filings, the corporate filings in states across or near Washington, D.C., that list Imran Awan and all the Awan family. The connection to Pakistani ISI is understated at best by many. The connection to the Seth Rich homicide is also important here, because this does speak at some level. There's an overlap here between the Seth Rich homicide, or at least, let me back up, or at least Seth Rich's potential or ostensible involvement in leaking information to Julian Assange, perhaps a WikiLeaks, and the DNC. Don't forget, Debbie Wasserman Schultz was part of this, and it's been reported Seth Rich may have seen Imran Awan and partied with him at Lou's City Bar the night before he was dead. Now, no one's talking, or at least no one with any kind of, no one that you could believe, no one with any integrity is talking with respect to what happened that night. So who to believe? little bit sketchy in that respect. But all of this does tie together, and that's kind of what I want to make this. I want to make everyone known. Make this known to everyone. All of this, the dots connect, and I'm working as hard as I can, and we are here at the Hagmann Report in order to connect these dots. And I would really urge everyone to keep their eyes open and notify your congressman and ask them where do we stand with respect to this investigation. Don't take the indictment, which you look at, is just 0.1% of what's really taking place. The indictment is a document of severe omission, intentional omission. There's more omitted from that indictment than is included in that indictment. There's, by orders of magnitude, much more omitted from the indictment than is included in the indictment. And that, to me, is an absolute shame. Folks, I've got to tell you, the more I look into this and the more we put the names and the businesses on the whiteboard, and the more we look at the various aspects of the Awans, whether it be Imran or Hina Alvi, and you might be sick of hearing about these people by now. I know I'm sick of looking at the name, you know. One more thing. Expect to see some incorrect pieces coming out in the media over the next couple of days. When I say incorrect, hit pieces, pieces that will take independent researchers to task for overstating things. Of course, you could take a look at, as I mentioned, the indictment. Nothing in there about potential espionage, nothing about travels to Pakistan, nothing about the Pakistani reception. But the more we see what's going on within the House, and I let off with the Black Congressional Caucus, okay? Isn't it interesting that the House of Representatives has been infiltrated to this level, to this extent? And isn't it interesting that that when you look at the overview, when you look at how the election took place in 2016, how the nomination was taken from Sanders, given to Hillary Clinton, it was under Debbie Wasserman Schultz's tutelage where that happened. And then when you start connecting that with the deaths of Wisenant, the prosecutors looking into some irregularities in Florida, of which, and by the way, who happens to be in Debbie Wasserman Schultz's district. And then you look at Seth Rich, and you look at all of these other seemingly disparate events. And then you've got the drumbeat of the mainstream media saying none of this is true. Well, I've got to tell you, take a secondary look at this. Take another look at this, indeed. Take a look at all of these seemingly disparate events and connect the dots. You've got too many connections here. The DNC, the claims of Russian government hacking within the DNC and having this information turned over to WikiLeaks. What's the story there? What's the story with Dana Rohrabacher going to see Julian Assange and giving information to Dana Rohrabacher that is destined for the president? Of course, a little quid pro quo with respect to asking for White House access on the press side. But having said all of that, what happened with the DNC servers, the CrowdStrike, the servers were allegedly hacked. CrowdStrike was the company that represented the DNC and said, hey, in the summer of 2015, a Russian hacker by the name of Cozy Bear struck the servers, and then sometime in April of 2016, Fancy Bear struck the servers, allegedly hacked the DNC servers, when in fact none of this really did happen. You see the mess that this is? It is a mess, isn't it? Keep your eyes open. Keep watch. Until tomorrow. More on the ones tomorrow. Watch for additional information on HomelandSecurityUS.com. Hagmann Report tonight, 7 to 10 p.m. John and Joe, 2 to 3.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report. Tune in to The Hagmann Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmannReport.com. That's HagmannReport.com.